We're continuing our series on money and finances from the Bible, and we're in the area of sins that are often closely associated with money, that are they're either attend money or money is the motivating factor to cause us to sin. And there's one that maybe we're not real familiar with, but there are many things in our own day and practice that are similar, where they used to have what they called pledges in the Bible. Maybe you've seen that word. And one of the sins regarding pledges was there was a withholding of pledges unjustly, which was a misuse of the purpose of a pledge and a wronging of the person who had given the pledge. If you want to turn to Exodus 22, we can start there. Now, a pledge is something on the order of what we would call a down payment. Not exactly the same. It might be closer to what we would think of as collateral. Collateral is something of value that you would put down on a debt or toward a debt to secure it. But in the Bible time, they would put down a pledge, and that pledge was held by the lender to secure a payment, but the pledge wasn't to be kept by the lender or the seller. It was to be returned to its owner. So either I borrowed money or I was in debt to you and I gave you a pledge as a token of my intention to pay and as a collateral to guarantee payment. And so again, that pledge was not the possession of the person it was given to. It had to be returned eventually to the owner. And many times they would withhold pledges. But in Exodus 22, 26 and 27, it says, "If thou at all take thy neighbor's raiment to pledge," that's pretty serious. "I'll give you the only clothes I have on my back to guarantee that I'll pay what I owe you. Thou shalt deliver it unto him by that the son go it down." Right? Now you have a situation where you're in a warm climate, but when the sun goes down, it could turn quite cold. There could be a dramatic change of temperature. And here, they've given you their warmer clothing as a pledge. And it says, you got to give it back to him by the time the sun goes down, for that is his covering only. It is his raiment for his skin. Or, you know, his skin depends on it for warmth. Wherein shall he sleep? And it shall come to pass when he crieth unto me that I will hear, for I am gracious. As I give you my warm coat for a pledge. Now the sun goes down, it gets cold, and instead of you bringing me my coat so I can sleep in it and be comfortable, you withhold it. Saying, "Oh, it's not going to pay me," they don't get their pledge. And the person's so cold they can't sleep well, and they're spending their waking hours shivering and crying out to God out of wrong. And God says, "Well, if that happens, I'm going to hear that prayer, and I'm going to deal with that wrong because of the fact that God is gracious that way." Over in Job refers to this. As we need to be reliable and keep our obligations and not use that which belongs to another for ourselves, or withhold that which is another's for ourselves and to wrong them. We need to show mercy even in our business transactions. Job 22. Here's Eliphaz accusing Job of all kinds of terrible crimes, falsely accusing him. In verse 5 he says, "Is not thy wickedness great and thine iniquities infinite?" How would you like to be suffering and have your friend come over to you and say, "Your sins are so great. I mean, they're beyond comprehension. They're infinite. You can't even count them all." Oh, thank you. And then he gives some examples of what he thought Job had done. "For thou hast taken a pledge from thy brother for naught, and stripped the naked of their clothing." And maybe it was a minor kind of a deal or transaction. It didn't really require a pledge, but you wanted to be kind of severe and rough and make sure you got what you had coming, and so you became a little excessive. "Taking a pledge from thy brother for naught," he calls it stripping the naked of their clothing. In other words, if I don't get mine, too bad, what happens to you? Over in chapter 24. Now here's he describing the wicked in general. It says, verse 3, "They drive away the ass of the fatherless, and they take the widow's ox for a pledge." Now, you remember how God is very careful that we look out for those who are helpless and needy. And he often mentions fatherless and widows as prime examples of that. Well, you know, back then, your animals were your wealth and they were your livelihood. You depended upon them. And so here you have a case of the poor fatherless child that had an ass for its, to do its work and earn some money so it could live. You take that. And then you have the widow who has an ox. And evidently that was a means that she had for plowing and things of that nature, so she could have food. They take that for a pledge. And then what does that end up doing? It impoverishes them and leaves them without any means to make ends meet. And that was very cruel and unjust. And so again, this is a bad thing. Verse 9, it says, "They plucked the fatherless from the breast." Oh, you can't pay? Well, then we'll just take your child, your young child, as payment. Imagine a nursing mother having its child, her child, torn from her arms and taken away from her because you owe a debt. Not a pleasant prospect. And then it says, "And they take a pledge of the poor." There's the poor who can't afford anything. They make sure they take what they have for the sake of a pledge. And probably they had sold something to the poor or lent money to the poor because they needed it and they felt they could take advantage of their trouble. And then they even take the pledge on top of that. And so it made their life very miserable. How about Deuteronomy has some things about the taking of the pledge? Deuteronomy 24. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 6. "No man shall take the nether," that's the lower, "or the upper millstone to pledge." All right, now here you're getting right down to the very basics of life. You know, the basic necessities. What was an upper nether millstone for? To grind grain, to make bread, and bread is the staple of life. You know, the minimum food that was necessary to maintain life and health and strength. And if you took that, then the person would not even be able to eat. He takes a man's life to pledge when he does that. Verse 10, "When thou dost lend thy brother anything," right? You have to borrow for necessity, and someone lends you so you can have what you need. It says, thou shalt not go into his house to fetch his pledge. Now, you cannot cross that person's threshold and walk into the house and say, I demand a pledge, and grab what's there and take it with you. In other words, they didn't have any Jewish collection agencies. thou shalt stand abroad. As you had to respect that person's property and his, you know, right of possession, and not go trespassing and tromping all over him. Stand abroad, in other words, stay outside, away from the house, and the man to whom thou dost lend shall bring out the pledge abroad unto thee. In other words, you're not just ripping it away from him, you know, like he feels like he's being robbed or violated. He comes out and voluntarily turns it over. And it says, if the man be poor, thou shalt not sleep with his pledge. Or don't keep his pledge overnight, especially if it's his clothes that he has to sleep in. In any case, thou shalt deliver him the pledge again when the sun goeth down, that he may sleep in his own raiment and bless thee. It's better to have him blessing you than to have his pledge and to have him praying against you to God, like we saw in the other place. This will bring you his blessing, not his praying against you. And it says, and it shall be righteousness unto thee before the Lord thy God. In other words, God looks on that as a righteous act. Verse 17 and 18 says, thou shalt not pervert the judgment of the stranger. Now, don't take advantage of foreigners because, you know, they're unfamiliar with things and they're kind of on their own. They don't know anybody and they have no one to look out for them. He says, nor of the fatherless, nor take a widow's raiment to pledge. Now, again, a widow being someone very needy and destitute and without any help. Thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in Egypt, and the Lord thy God redeemed thee thence. Therefore I command thee to do this thing. In other words, have a merciful attitude. And what I mean by that is, remember when you've been in tight times, when you've had trouble, and you needed extra help, how would you have liked to have been treated? Well, look what God's done for you, how many times he's provided for you, how many times he's delivered you, and how kind he was in doing that. Are you going to be harsh and mean and stingy and cruel to others when they're in that circumstance? How could you forget? You know, and how could you do to others what you would not have wanted done to you when you were in that situation? Chapter 27, 19 says, cursed be he that perverteth the judgment of the stranger, fatherless, and widow. All the people shall say, amen. All right. Look out for those in need. Help them as you're able. Don't be oppressive to them. But rather be kind and generous. A couple more places on this point. Ezekiel chapter 18 and verse 12. Again, chapter 18 is talking about what is righteous behavior and what is wicked behavior, and how those behaviors show what the condition of an individual is based on how they behave, what's in his heart. It's talking about in verse 12, some of the evil behaviors of a wicked man. He hath oppressed the poor and needy. He hath spoiled by violence. He hath not restored the pledge. And hath lifted up his eyes to the idols and hath committed abomination. In other words, the pledge was not his to keep. It was just, like I say, something that was given to secure payment of a debt, but it was to be returned. So he thought, I'll not only get the payment, I'll get the pledge too. And that was wrong. One more, Amos chapter 2. Here's God setting before the people their sins and his intention to punish them for their sins. And verse 7 says that pant after the dust of the earth on the head of the poor. Boy, how's that for trying to get everything from them they can? The very dust on their head. And turn aside the way of the meek, and a man and his father will go in unto the same maid to profane my holy name. And they lay themselves down upon clothes. What clothes? Clothes laid to pledge by every altar. And they drink the wine of the condemned in the house of their God. In other words, they're religious people. They're going through the rituals of worship, and yet they're sleeping around the altars on stolen pledges, while there are those who are suffering because they lack the very, you know, basic minimum amount of clothing necessary to be warm, and it's because they have taken it from them, so they do not have those things available to them. They're sleeping for their own comfort on someone's pledge who's freezing because he's not covered adequately. So withholding pledges is another sin that people committed for the sake of gaining wealth. Another one the Bible talks about as being very wrong is withholding pay for labor. If we hire someone to do a job and we don't pay them either anything at all, in other words, we take their labor and then we don't give them their wages, or we don't pay it to them on time, we make them wait so that they're put in the difficulty, or we pay inadequate wages, in other words, we give them as little as possible and squeeze them so that we can have a lot for ourselves, then this is a sin in the eyes of God also. Either not paying wages for work that was done at all, or not paying it on time, or not paying sufficient wages for the job. Leviticus 19 and verse 13, it says there, "Thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him." Now, how do you defraud and rob your neighbor? "The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning." Now, if you remember in the Bible, they'd work for a day, and then at the end of the day, they'd get their penny or their day's wage. Well, then they got the penny, they went out, bought their provisions for that night and the next day. Well, if you didn't pay them that night, they went to bed hungry and didn't have anything in the morning when they woke up. And so he's saying, don't defraud your neighbor and rob him. And the way you do it is by keeping the wages that he earned for yourself and not paying him at the day's end. And that, of course, puts him under hardship. Deuteronomy 24 verses 14 and 15. Of course, this was always famous at Xerox. They expected you to pay them just before lunch or a half hour before lunch so that they could go out to the credit union and get their money, right? And if somehow the checks were late, all of a sudden you start yelling and screaming, or when they used to have the PA, you'd hear, "Where's the money? Where's the money?" Everyone wanted to have that money right at that time, and if it wasn't there, boy, they really put up a stink. Well, here's part of the reason why. I don't know if any of them would have gone to bed hungry because of it, but you're supposed to pay on time. Deuteronomy 24, 14 and 15 says, "Thou shalt not oppress a hired servant that is poor and needy." Again, taking advantage of those who are in need, whether he be of thy brethren or of thy strangers that are in thy land within thy gates. At his day, now what day is that? That very day that he works. Payday, we call it. Thou shalt give him his hire, or his wages that he earned for his labor. Neither shall the sun go down upon it. Notice, why shouldn't I let the sun go down before I pay him his wage? For he is poor, and he sets his heart upon it. Or as he depends on that money because he doesn't have extra. And so it says, and he cry against thee unto the Lord, and it be sin unto thee. Whereas if you don't pay someone immediately on time, in the Bible it would have been the day that he worked, at the end of his work day, that person would be put into a real tough spot. He would end up having to cry out to God out of wrong against the person who didn't pay him, and God would count that as sin and punish them for it. Malachi chapter 3. Verse 5. Here's God saying, of course, he sees all our actions. He is fully aware of our sins. And he talks about judging the people for their evil deeds. And here's the ones he mentions. I will come near to you to judgment. And I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers, right? The occultists, the immoral, and against false swearers, you know, the liars, and those who are guilty of perjury, and against those that oppress the hireling in his wages. All right, it's called an oppression or a defrauding of the hireling. Now, you hire someone to work, and then you don't pay them for their work. That's a sin. It says the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right. All right, it's an unrighteous thing. It's unjust to withhold wages from those we hire and promise to pay for their labor. And the reason they do that is it says, they fear not me, saith the Lord of hosts. Why are people willing to wrong other people? Because they have no fear of God. If we have fear of God, we're not going to wrong our fellow man. And that's why faith is very practical. The world would be a better place if people recognized and reverenced God. Then they treat each other better as well. One more is James chapter 5. We said that the hireling would cry out against the wicked employer that doesn't pay them as promised, and that would be sin. Notice how God speaks of that very thing in James 5, verse 4. He's talking about the rich men and how they were going to come into judgment. And it says, behold, here's why God was going to deal with them so severely. The hire or the wages of the laborers who have reaped down your fields. Right, they've already done the work. You hired them, they did the work, and they've earned a salary from you. But it says, which is of you kept back by fraud. You retained their wages, never paid them. It says it cries. Those wages that you're holding on to are crying out to God. And the cries of them which have reaped, in other words, the workers themselves are crying out to God. And their cries are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. And again, they're doing a wrong, and God, of course, is the avenger of all such, those who go beyond and defraud their brother in any way. Right, we're going to do one more today. Another big problem is not returning borrowed items. Now, we all borrow things occasionally because we need something. And what happens when we don't get it back to the owner as we found it? And that's not a good situation. Exodus 22. Exodus 22. I'm going to begin at verse 7. If a man shall deliver unto his neighbor money or stuff to keep. Here, could you keep this for me? Watch it. Hold on to it. You know, take care of it for me. For whatever reason. Maybe he's going to be away and he needs it guarded while he's gone. And if it be stolen out of the man's house, I give it to you to keep it, and someone steals it from you. If the thief be found, let him pay double. That might stop some thievery. If the thief be not found, then the master of the house shall be brought unto the judges. All right, you have this person's things, and now they're gone. And no thief has come forward. You're responsible for those things that you have that belongs to someone else. So you have, it becomes a matter of a court case. Go to the judges and see whether he have put his hand into his neighbor's goods. Find out if the person who was holding him is the one who took him for himself and claimed that they were stolen or whatever. For all manner of trespass, whether it be for ox, for ass, for sheep, for raiment, or for any manner of lost thing which another challenges to be his, the cause of both parties shall come before the judges, and whom the judges shall condemn, he shall pay double unto his neighbor. Wow. You give me a dollar, and I say, I lost it. Well, did someone take it? I don't know. I just don't know what happened to it. Well, let's go down to the judges. And they look into it, and, well, you know what? You had it. You're responsible for it. You're going to have to make it good. Give them $2. Oh. Well, maybe I better give him his $1 first instead of trying to take it and end up paying him two, and be honest in the process. If a man deliver unto his neighbor an ass or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep, all right, you give me one of your animals and it die. And while I have it, it dies. Or be hurt, something happens to injure it, or driven away. No man's seeing it. In other words, no one saw what happened to this animal, but it's either dead, injured, or gone. And no one can account for what happened. Then shall an oath of the Lord be between them both. In other words, he has to make a promise before God that he hath not put his hand unto his neighbor's goods. And the owner of it shall accept thereof, and he shall not make it good. In other words, all right, you didn't do anything wrong. You know, it wasn't your responsibility. That's fine. And if it be stolen from him, he shall make restitution unto the owner thereof. In other words, I was responsible to keep it. If I let it get stolen, I have to make it up to you. If it be torn in pieces, then let him bring it for a witness. In other words, here's the pieces. You know, here's what happened. And he shall not make good that which was torn. And all right, let's a little further. And if a man borrow aught of his neighbor, and it be hurt or die, the owner thereof being not with it, he shall surely make it good. But if the owner thereof be with it, he shall not make it good. If it be an hired thing, it came for his hire. So in other words, I borrow something from you, you're not there, and something happens to it, I have to make good on it to you. If you're there and it happens while we're both using it or both involved, I don't have to make it good. You know, you were a part of what happened too. And again, if I pay you for something, then I can use it on that basis. And so the payment for the use of it evidently covers whatever happens to it while I'm using it. Okay. We need to return borrowed items. And here's a good reason why. This will be our last verse. Psalm 37 and verse 2. Yeah, 2. I want 21. The wicked borroweth. Oh, I'll never borrow another thing. Now, it doesn't say don't borrow. It says the wicked borroweth and payeth not again. That's the problem. It doesn't forbid borrowing. The evil of it is not returning what you borrow. And then it talks about the righteous. They have a generous giving attitude. The righteous showeth mercy and giveth. Not only will he not return someone else's property, but he'll be freed to share of his own property with those who are in need and ask for it. So there you have three things: withholding pledges, not paying on time or paying at all, or paying adequately for wages to those who do a job for us, and then not returning borrowed items. And those are things we need to be aware of in our own lives and be sure that we are not guilty of. And as you can see, there's a vast area involving use of money, and the Bible has a lot to say about what is wrong about that and what is right about that. And may God help us to line up our lives accordingly.